Actually, no, you have that.
Is that going to be a problem?
Well, I won't say all the controversial stuff I was about to say. What I just said a minute ago, make sure not to repeat to anyone. We could talk about Zriya probably forever. That will inhibit our ability to move on. So we'll try to just highlight some other points about Zriya today, and really should try to put that in the ground. Sorry. I have to say something like that. In terms of some of the Lamaisa points about Zriya, there's also a lot to say. We'll touch on some of the points. There is a fascinating set of svarim by the Yisrael David Harfenis, Talmud Chacham from Sabna, has many, many svarim. He was once upon a time, we're just introducing, I haven't really started yet. Once upon a time, he was most famous for his sefer on Zmanim, Yisrael Vazmanim, very important work as well. Since then, he's come out with many sefer halacha on many, many, many topics, and usually in a shaila and tshuva format. He has, at this point, he has a volume on most of the Mo'adim. He has a nice volume on the 3 weeks. But he also has a separate set on Shabbos called Nishmas Shabbos, which is a little frustrating because he keeps adding random volumes in the middle and in the beginning and the end, and a little hard to keep track of. But this is one of about 37 volumes that he has on this. You see, looking at the cover, some of the various sections of Shulchan Aruch that he talks about. So he has in here about Zriya and Utzitz and a lot of related topics. So there are dozens of Lamaisa Tshuvas about Zriya in here. If you want to take a look, maybe we'll bring it back tomorrow as well. If you want to take a look inside, we probably won't have time together to go through all of these kinds of details. Okay, so let's try to add some more points. And yesterday, I think we were in the middle of a potted plant. We were in the middle of Utzitz Nakov, Utzitz Sheino Nakov. So just to begin with, I think where we had left off yesterday, we were talking about the din of Utzitz Nakov. If you have a plant that has a plot that has holes in it, so then strictly speaking, you have an issue of Zriya. Then that's essentially considered to be connected to the ground. The question that's discussed is what happens if you move it from the ground to a stand of pegs on top of the ground, where really there continues to be a nourishment coming through the holes, and you're altering that by moving it from one point to the next. So we mentioned that the Gemara says that that's an issue of Zriya and of Tlisha, depending on what direction you're going in. However, a lot of the Rishonim say, Rashi and Tosfos and others, that doesn't really mean it. That it's an issur derabbanan. It's not really an issur min haTorah. They're motivated because the reason they think it has to be an issur derabbanan is because of a different sugya. There is a whole discussion the Gemara has about kavod abrios, about you're allowed to violate dinim derabbanan for human dignity, which includes personal hygiene. And the Gemara says that an example of what you were allowed to do is to move a rock that has grass growing on it from the ground to pick it up. And it sounds like it sounds from the Gemara very much so that that's pretty much parallel to an Utzitz Nakov. It's essentially the same type of relationship. And yet, you're allowed to do this for purposes of Kavod Abrios. So we don't allow an Issur D'oraisa for purposes of Kavod Abrios. So, therefore, apparently it's an issur derabbanan. Apparently, when the Gemara says that there's a chiyuv of Zriya and Tlisha, it doesn't mean it literally. It's the opposite direction we're normally going, that, you know, we have to train ourselves in Halacha Shabbos, and when the Gemara says pater or lecha mishum this, it often doesn't mean that it's mutter. And here, this is the opposite. Here, it says chayiv, but apparently it doesn't mean that it's chayiv, apparently, according to these Rishonim. But the Rambam does sound like it means that it's chayiv. How do you deal with this raya? There's a whole literature about this, and a lot of literature about this point focuses more on the tolesh component. So maybe we'll revisit it when we get to tolesh kotze, which comes a little bit later. But some suggest that the whole heter is when you're intending to take the rock and use it and then put it right back, which maybe doesn't have the same status as actually removing it from its source of growth, and maybe there's yesh l'chalik between the two scenarios. But in any event, assuming that there basically is then a machlokas among the Rishonim as to whether or not there is a iser daraisa involved in shifting the rate of growth, so the Eglei Tal and others suggest that this goes to a question of whether there is a malacha involved in speeding up a malacha, or slowing it down, depending on which direction we're focusing on. So we mentioned yesterday, it does sound like from a lot of the malachas and the toldos that we're talking about in the context of Zriya, that that is what's going on. It's a question of affecting its rate, not necessarily of doing it to begin with. And the suggestion that Eglei Tal and others made is maybe there could be a distinction made between speeding it up and making it better. That maybe making it better is a malacha of Zriya, maybe speeding it up isn't. In this context, he discusses, I don't know if we got to this yesterday, that when it comes to Bishul, so we know that there clearly does seem to be an issue. Right? The whole Hagasa concern, the reason we have a blach on Shabbos is so that we shouldn't poke around and speed up the process of Bishul. So apparently there is an Isser Daraisa involved in speeding up Bishul. So the Eglei Tal suggests, and again we'll keep in mind the Eglei Tal is basically in the camp of the Mechastinuch, that there is a distinction between Zriya and Bishul, relevant here as well, that Zriya happens right away, and Bishul is all about the end product, so therefore if you are bringing the end product around earlier, so then that would be a problem, but Zriya wouldn't necessarily have the same issue, it's more all or nothing, and therefore perhaps one can distinguish between the two and say there is a concept in Bishul that doesn't necessarily have its parallel in Zriya. So again, the distinction, it's worth just remember the whole Rashash Mechazkinuch story, which a lot of it is hypothetical and lumdish, but it has a lot of practical ramifications and keeps resurfacing. It has a lot to be said about it. In terms of the whole idea of planting in a pot in general, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein has a discussion in his Sefer Chashukei Chemed, where he has a Sefer on the Masechtas, a series on Masechtas with that title, so a Sefer on Shabbos, on the Ayin Gimel. So he discusses, let's say somebody puts an avocado seed in water. We'll talk about water a little bit in general, but let's say somebody puts it in. He comes at it from the perspective of Otzis Nako, Ratzish Enenako, that is that an issue of Zriya, that essentially it's going to grow in there, and you're doing it really l'shem noi. There's some type of a, doesn't really attract you maybe, but there is a, some type of a ornament that people would make by putting avocado seeds in water. So is that an issue? So his belief is that it is an issue. That even though, even according to those who would pater within, planting within an atzitz, that's because it is not kederach hazorim. But here, it says it is Kederach HaZorim, because it's kind of a roundabout way, saying that he's assuming that this is considered to be Zriya, and then this is the Derech, because if you want it to be L'shem Noi, so it's got to be visible, not underground. So it's kind of an interesting combination of two halves of the equation, that when you have the first goal is Zriya, to say this is a Derech of Zriya. That's how he assumes, and therefore he thinks that's a big problem to do that. And he then recommends that if you did this, and then opened up the Sefer and saw this, that you should take it out. And he says, even though there would be a muksa concern, he thinks that it's a concern more of a violating a daraisa by leaving it in. And then he says, aye, but what about, he seems to assume the halacha, like the Mechas Hinuch and others, that it doesn't help to take it out. So if we say it doesn't help to take it out of the ground, why does it help to take it out of the water? So he says, this is different. He says, this is really kind of a tolda of Zriya, that essentially, since it's not standard putting something in the ground, and therefore the dimion, the point at where it reaches Zriya, is really in its sprouting in the water. So since even if we say that you can't cancel the Zriya in the ground, you can cancel the Zriya in the cup, and he advocates taking it out, an interesting type of approach. And in terms of Atzitz She'eino Nakuv, So that was a machlokas in general, what the story is about planting in Eretz Sheinu Nakov. A lot of the Achronim thought that that was not a Chiyuv Daraisa. That's what the Magen Avos assumes, and Degle Tal. And the Gemara says, Beferish, that it's not an issue of Tolish, taking something out of Eretz Sheinu Nakov. So most assume that it's parallel. The exception is the Chayadim and Nishmas Adam, where he says that it is an issue that we don't assume that Tolish and Zareya are exact opposites, and it has to do with a Derech concern, and this is a way sometimes people plant in an Otzitz Shainanakov, so therefore he thought that was something to be concerned about. So that's a general machlokas among the Poskim about what the status is of planting in such a setting.
And as much as people plant in the Otzitz Shainanakov, so they're also presumably harvesting from that same Otzitz Shainanakov.
Not necessarily, because if they're planting flowers, you know, they may leave them there. Right. You know, if it's decorative, which, you know, probably, but, you know, it could go either way. Maybe the truth is you could also plant food in such a thing. So, point is well taken, as is the food. There is a discussion in general, what's called an Atzat Shenanakav. He has a truth about this here on Mishmash Shabbos, you can take a look, that there is some difference in the poskim in terms of whether different materials might be considered nakov, even if they're not nakov. That some materials, and it's machlokas, what counts, whether wood or clay or the like, it could be that their surface is permeable enough that even if there are no holes, it still may be subject to dinim of atzis nakov. And so lemaisa, that's a kedai to be aware of. You know, if you're thinking of putting an atzis sheino nakov in a ground, and assuming that that's not knuckles, so then that's something to figure out exactly what it's made out of, and to look a little bit into the literature as far as what counts and what doesn't count. So what about the whole discussion that some have brought up? We haven't talked about it together yet, but it's been brought up, the Rambam's psak, that if you soak seeds, or if you soak, let's say, a grain or barley in water, so then one is liable, that one is chayiv mishum zareya. So the Nosei Kelim and the Mefarshim in general raise the question where he gets this from. Now it is the Gemara that says that there's an issue, but the Gemara raises a different issue. The Gemara raises a lush issue, but not an issue of zareya. So where does the Rambam get that there's a zareya concern? So there are a number of different approaches to this. One approach that many of the Mefarshim have with the Tiferes Yisrael and the Mekevus HaMishnah and others is the assumption that this will eventually sprout. That if you leave it in water long enough, something is going to happen. Others, however, understand differently. There's a tshuva of the Radbaz, which is interesting, where he suggests that the purpose of soaking these seeds is that then afterwards you'll plant them in the ground and they will grow quicker. So therefore, this is an act of preparation for ultimate sprouting in the ground, and that's how it comes into the whole Zriya family. And the Primosh and others suggest that the Rambam, therefore, in saying such a thing, is getting this from, really, a Rashashian view. Because he's saying that if the idea is that the focus is on the ultimate sprouting and implantation, so then what is your part? Your part is doing the step that prepares it for that. So if we said that putting it in the ground, like a Menchas Chinuch, is the whole Zriya, so then the question is, what does soaking in water have to do with putting it in the ground? Unless you were the belief that it will grow that way. But what he's saying is that it's not about growing, it's about preparing it for growing in the ground. So he's saying, if you say like the Rashash, that it's about ultimately causing a implantation, so then anything that you do that leads to that implantation is an act of Zriya. So putting it in the ground is an act of Zriya, but also soaking it in water so that the implantation will happen more quickly is also an act of Zriya. It's an interesting idea. So that's how some understand, and that this is a little bit of a chiddush, that this whole act of preparation is something that is also considered to be within the Zriya mold. Yitzchak was also asking that the Magen Avraham explains over there that in order for it to be Zriya, so it doesn't just mean you put it in for 5 minutes. you have to soak it for a while. So the question comes up, so how does that parallel? That if we say that when it comes to Zriya in general, that putting it in the ground right away, and again now we're back to the Mechasinuch type of view, we say that putting it in the ground right away is already a malacha, so how does that shtim, if it has to shtim, with the idea that there's a half-day time limit here, minimum time limit? So it could be that that's just the definition of what's called to be a Maisa Zriya. That only becomes a Maisa Zriya once it reaches a certain threshold. It's because of the difference between putting it in the ground. So something we discussed before. Rabbi Warman Shlita talks about this in his Sefer Oros HaShabbos, and his focus is on the other explanation, that it's about the Hashrasha, but he says that since it takes time to get to the Hashrasha, so here we have a model where theoretically it could something could happen on Shabbos, but it's going to take like half a day to get to that, so that's where you get this half-day limit. You have to figure out if that exactly parallels or not. It's an interesting suggestion. But that's the point that he's
working with the Rosh Hashanah view.
That's working with
so to speak, less. It takes less time and water than
apparently. Right? Yeah. That's the shear for the Rosh Hashanah, which is an interesting idea. The Nishma Saddam understands from this Rambam that was why he took the view that Atzis Chenenakov is Chayit, because he says, what's the difference between a cup of water or a bowl of water and enough sushenakov? They're both not normal derech of planting, so let them both be chayav. So others disagree. And others suggest, especially if you follow the Radbaz's approach, if you say that it's about preparing it for future implantation in the soil. So that's the difference. So it's not saying that you could have a Zriya outside of the ground. It's saying that this act prepares it for Zriya in the ground, and therefore it's really not parallel to sushenakov. Okay, so and again, a lot of the postmen do disagree with the Nishma Saddam on that point. There is a general question, a lot of writers from the Gemara one way or another about this, about whether the definition of Zriya, which, let's say, for example, the way the Magen Avos puts it, is the definition of Zriya involves putting something in the ground and covering it up. So that's a whole discussion, if that really is a crucial part of Zriya or not. It'll segue a little bit into Harisha. Now, our Gemara basically talks about the whole order of Zriya and Harisha. It's a whole discussion. Our Mishnah mentions Zriya first, then Harisha. So the Gemara raises the question, but you have to plow first before you plant. So then the question is, well, maybe what's happening is you plow, then plant, then plow again. So plowing again is really for the purposes of sometimes the question of what the land needs, what type of land you have, but it's really for the purpose of covering up the seeds in soil. So it could be really that's an act of Zriya. Maybe that's just the completion of the act of Zriya. So that's a whole discussion in some of the later literature and drawing on some of the Rishonim. So what is this second Harisha? Is that an act of Harisha or is it an act of Zriya? And that's related to the whole question of the definition of Zriya. There's a Gemara earlier that suggests that if you want to, let's say you have food, you have a plant, that's a vegetable that you want to keep fresh. So you're still waiting around for your refrigerator to be invented. So while you're waiting, you realize it's like 50-50 if the vegetable is going to be fresh that long, so you want to put it back in the ground. So is there an inyan of Zriya then, essentially, that this could theoretically grow back in the ground? So is that an inyan of Zriya? So the Gemara mentions that you have to have the leaves sticking out. So that sounds like a definition of Zriya is that it's fully covered in the ground, and lacking that, then it's not going to be considered to be Zriya. So that's a whole discussion. There's a Gemara also in Maseches Makis and Daf Kaf Aleph, which talks about how you can be chai of many things at once, and talks about being choresh, yesh choresh telemechad, and while you're being choresh, you're also doing Zriya because you're completing the soil being on top of the seeds. So all of that does seem to indicate that that's a crucial part of the process. That's a whole discussion Does it have a nafkamina? It might have a nafkamina. Sefer near David, a nice sefer on the Malachas, that he talks about this issue, and he talks about a number of the possible nafkaminas, kind of relate to some of the issues we talked about in terms of Zriya by itself. For example, what if one, separate case we haven't spoken about, what if one person puts it in and somebody else covers it up? So who's chayev? Are they both chayev? Or one of them chayev? Is that a shnayim shasa'u case? What happens if you put it in the ground on Friday afternoon and you cover it up on Shabbos? So is that considered to be a complete ma'aseh or not? And what happens if you put it in the ground and you pick it up before it's covered up, even according to Minchas Chinuch? Maybe you've not finished the act of Zriya. So all of these could be differences of this question. If we assume that covering it up in the ground is crucial for it to be considered as Zriya, so all of these discussions play a role as well. Another issue that we know is considered to be some kind of a problem is watering the ground. Watering the ground, as the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Moed Katan talks about as being a problem on Shabbos. The question is, what kind of a problem is it? Is it a problem of Zareya, or is it a problem of Choresh? Because as we'll see, we segue into Choresh very soon. So Choresh seems to be defined by preparing the ground for being planted, in terms of softening it, in terms of making it ready for that purpose. So therefore, the classification of watering the ground might really be a Choresh issue. And again, then it gets into questions, did Choresh only happen before the Zriya, it happened after the Zriya as well? So there is a whole literature about this, about we assume that there is a concern about watering the ground. The question is, what malach is it? What difference does it make? That's a separate issue. But whether it's considered to be an act of Zriya or considered to be an act of Choresh, if it's considered to be an act of Zriya, seems to be saying, along the lines of the issue we brought up before, that even something that is already Nizra, that is already planted, could be subject to further acts of Zriya, which itself is a question we saw in a few contexts. So that's going to be relevant. It's going to be relevant here as well. There is also a whole discussion of an indelicate topic of somebody relieves himself on the ground. So what exactly is the story there? So this is something that the Sefer Yireyim said was an issue. That's the same thing as watering the ground. In the Shulchan Aruch, it sounds like they're not concerned. It sounds like it's considered to be not helpful for the process of growth, damaging to the process of growth, and therefore not considered to be malacha as far as this is concerned. The Tiferes Yisrael, in his commentary, so he says that he consulted with scientists who told him that it is good for the ground. So he says he has a very hard time being makel on this against the view of the Urayim, who was Machmir, because he's concerned that it is helpful to the growth. I think the latest farm, for the most part, the impression I have is they follow the Shulchan Aruch, that they think that it is not considered to be helpful to the ground. So that's an important technical issue to be mevarer.
That's just Miravon?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're focusing on, right.
But the other way might be good for the ground.
Fertilization. Theoretically, yeah. I don't know how it works, but possibly. Right, so just focusing on the Mayor gland component. There is also a literature you might be familiar with. We'll just touch upon for a second the question of opening a window next to a plant. Assuming the sunlight helps, so is that considered to be an act of Zriya as well? Which, if it is, it's more in line of assuming that watering the ground is an act of Zriya, which itself, as we saw, is a topic of discussion. There are those who are makel on this, assuming that you're not doing it for the purposes of the plant, you're doing it so you can see, and it happens to be plants in the room. So there is a literature about this as well, which we're only just alluding to. Which there's some who suggest it should be mutter. There's a big machlokus between the Rashba and the Ran, and it's a question who the paskin like. The Rashba says that if you leave your house, say on Shabbos to go to shul, and there happens to have been a deer that walked into your house, So you lock the door on your way out so that your house doesn't get robbed, and in doing so, you trap the deer in your house. So Rashba says that's not considered to be a malach of tzedah. And the Ran has a whole machlokas about this. It's a question of how to paskin. It's a major topic in terms of some of the segregation issues that come up today, some of the electric eye issues. This literature is drawn on a lot. So the Rashba is focusing on two components. One is that you are intending to do something else, and the second is that you're not dealing with the deer directly. You're dealing with your house, and it happens to be that it also includes the deer. So there are those who say that opening the window would seem to be parallel to that. If you're doing it so you get light, and you're not actually addressing the plant directly, so then there is a tzad l'haka, and others might disagree. It's also a topic of discussion. The Gemara says that that Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara Masech is getting on that. Sorry?
Is there an issue with the shear, let's say when you talk about watering, or any of these things that enhance the growth? So to determine the shear is kind of difficult, and then maybe it's a... I guess we assume Chazal is anyway, assume it's a Midrash, so I guess not.
Right, probably, but also I guess the question is, what would the shear be in? Would the shear be in the water, or the shear would be in... because presumably any amount of water is going to have an exponential effect on some greater degree of land. You know, for a farmer is going to need a certain amount of water to make sure he gets all his crops, but we're not looking from the perspective of getting everything, we're looking from the perspective of it having any amount of effect. Probably doesn't have to be significant in order to get that, I would assume. But you have to ask the experts. So, the Gemara in Gittin says that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that on Shabbos, there's a difference between Shvius and Shabbos, because on Shabbos, that if you plant on Shabbos, separate from the whole Rosh Hashanah question of whether or not you can cancel it or not, but he says basically you shouldn't be able to benefit from what you planted, so whether it's a shogeg or a mezid, you should take it out so that you're not nene from it. And there's a whole literature about that, what's the difference between that and Bishul, where we do find a difference between shogeg and mezid and who it's for. And the Bir Halacha has a couple of suggestions as to what the difference might be between the two. There is an interesting tshuva about this in the Sefer HaRevna that has Pesachim from Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, that he talks about somebody who has a tshuva about some of the interesting cases. If I remember correctly, the case was there was an Israeli contractor who became a Baal Tshuva, and before he was religious, so his job was building houses, and in his spare time he built himself a house. So when was his spare time? He lived in Israel. When was his day off? On the Shabbos. So he had a house for himself that he built purely on Shabbos. So it's not really funny, I guess, but it's kind of hard to imagine a case like that. But apparently he had, over the course of some period of time, built the house purely on Shabbos. And then the question was, does he have to tear it down or not? How do we categorize it? So he has an interesting tshuva where he goes through some of the different suggestions as to what is it about Zriya or Bishul that is the definitive element, why even Bishogeg is a person considered to be a Shogeg, what exactly is the right category. It has an interesting tshuva about how to apply this whole Kanas concept to that. That's an interesting discussion in general. The Gemara, if you assume you've seen the sugyas here, so the Gemara talks about a number of other actions. Gemara here in Ayin Gimel Beis talks about a number of other actions that are in the basic category of Zareya. And it's not clear how to read this line. So a big debate among the Rishonim. The Gemara says that HaZareya VaHazomer VaHanoteya VaHamavrich VaHamarkiv Kulan Malacha Achasin. And that Zareya is what we've been talking about the whole time. But also, together with Zareya, there is a Zomer, which is a pruning. You're going to take away parts of the plant that are not contributing to its growth, that are interfering with its growth, rather. So that's an act also of Zareya. You know, the Rashi in the beginning of Mod Katan defines Zareya, and the Gemara over there, and the Rashi defines Zareya as anything that is contributory to the growth of the plant. So therefore, this, despite it being a negative action, is also considered to be contributory. V'hanoteya And somebody who plants here, instead of planting seeds, the way most understand, there's a little bit of discussion of different ways to understand what exactly is the difference here, but for now we'll just translate noteia as you are planting a plant, not a seed. You're putting a sapling. So you take a little tree or whatever it is and you put that in the ground. So that's considered to be noteia. V'hamavrich v'hamarkiv. So markiv is your grafting, and mavrich is you basically take some existing plant and you redirect it back into the ground, so it's going to become kind of like a subplant that's going to grow on its own. So kulon malacha acha same. So that's all one malacha. So what does that mean? That's all one malacha. Right. So if you look at Rashi. So Rashi says that Zareya av malacha, v'noteya nami av malachahu, dehainu Zareya, it's essentially the same thing. Ela shezeb izron v'zeb ilanos. That's how we just explained it, even though there are those who explain it differently. But one is with seeds and one is with trees, small trees. V'chein mavrich u'markiv, also considered to be av malachah, so all these are av malachas. Aval zomer tolda. Zomer is considered to be tolda. You look at Rabbeinu Hanan understands it basically in the reverse way, that really it's only Zareya that is the Av, and that everything else is a Tolda of that. And the Rambam is, see if you look at the Rabbeinu Hanan at the bottom here, and Noteya Vladu, Noteya, against Rashi, he says Noteya is a Tolda. Zomer is a tolda of Noteya, so to speak, which is itself a tolda, it's a grandson essentially, of Zareya. So he understands really Zareya as the Av and everything else is the toldas. Rashi understands everything as an Av except for Zomer being a tolda, and the Rambam has Zomer as me'ein ha'av, essentially, basically like an av, which means that category exists. Not all the Rishonim have such a category, so it's a little bit of a question how you define what's an av, what's a tolda, what makes the cut. You know, say that we say like Rashi that all of these are avos. So what happens to the 39 avos? So apparently there are slots that sometimes rotate, like for example Afia and Bishul. So our Mishnah talks about Afia, and Rashi over there says really Bishul is what we're more interested in. So apparently no one says that they take two separate slots in the Malachos. So apparently there is, like in that case, 11a and 11b. So they basically are different ways of accomplishing the same goal with similar enough function, so then they're all going to be considered avos. But apparently, Rashi thinks that Zomer is not making the cut. Zomer is a tolda. In other words, it shares the function, but not the form. Essentially, it's also there in order to enhance the plant, but it's not happening in the same way. And the Rambam is more inclusive of Zomer. So I think Rav Shechter quoted from Rav Soloveitchik that the Rambam and Rashi are arguing a little bit about what the threshold is to make it into the Av family. That Rashi thinks that the reason it's not called an Av is probably because the action is so opposite. That even though the goal is the same, but Zareya and everything else is all about positive and adding things in. And here Zomer is really negative. It's about taking away that which will interfere, and therefore, since the thrust is going in a different direction, he is inclined to call that a tolda. Apparently, the Rambam doesn't see that as different enough, even though the Rambam probably does see watering, we talked about before, as a tolda. So I think the Rav is quoted as explaining that, because that already brings in an external factor when you're not just dealing with the same object, but you're now bringing in an assistant from elsewhere, so already that's going to be a tolda. So most of this doesn't have much nafkamina for us, b'zman hazeh, in terms of Halacha Shabbos. It does have a nafkamina for Shvius, because since we assume that in Halacha Shvius there's no toldas, there's only the avos, so something like Noteya, for example, if that's going to be a Tolda, so then it means, in terms of Shvius, it's going to be an Issur Derabanan only. So it's, it makes a major difference nowadays, especially when you have the Hetta Mechira discussion, what's considered to be an Issur Deraisa and an Issur Derabanan. Why it makes a difference is a complicated discussion, because the Hetta Mechira, of course, one of the most controversial topics around. Every single prop of it is controversial. It's pretty much agreed upon that in order for Shvius, in order for Hetta Mechira to work, you have to be dealing with Drabanos. To deal with the Deraisas, I think even the biggest advocate of the Hetta Mechira doesn't assume that the Hetta Mechira is effective for Deraisas. So then, how does something become Deraisa Drabanan? So then it's a whole discussion. Many assume that Shvius Bizman is completely Drabanan. That Bizman Shain Rov Yoshve Aleha. So that's, not everyone assumes like that, but that is a pretty dominant assumption. One of the contemporary poskim was very opposed to Hetta Mechira, and has a whole volume where he just attacks every single detail of Hetta Mechira. And if it's built on 10 parts, so if you disagree with one, that's enough. But he assumes you have to disagree with every single part. So he says, "And Shmita Daraisa, everything's wrong." So most poskim, I think, hold the Shmita is Drabanan. That's what the Netziv says in his Tshuva. He was also opposed to Hetta Mechira. So he thought that it was a bad idea because he thought that selling the land is a violation of Lo Sachanim Daraisa. So he says, it's like it's like running away from a bear and running into a lion, something like that. He says, in order to try to avoid the Yisr Drabanan that comes from Shvius, you'll violate the Yisr Daraisa of Lo Sachanim. He thinks that that's a terrible idea. So most assume that they're dealing with Yisurim Drabanan. But then on top of that, the question is, so what Yisurim are Drabanan even if Shvius is Daraisa? What is Drabanan within the Daraisa of Shvius? So it becomes an important discussion, what is an Av and what is not an Av, because again, in Shvius is going to have a much greater impact than in Shabbos. So what's the relationship between Noteya and Zareya is going to make a much bigger difference, because Noteya has a lot is included within Noteya. That's a pretty big practical. It's a pretty big practical arena. We mentioned yesterday and the day before that according to the Yerushalmi, so if you're extracting anything that's damaging, so then that's also a violation of Zareya on some level, and taking out insects and the like. So there is a discussion about this in the Chashuk Lechem, but again, it was Gilberstein. So he discusses a couple of hakiras about this. One, he says, so what if there's a lot of worms and you'll take out one? So it's not going to help because it's going to have still going to have problems with worms anyway. It's not necessarily parallel to when you do something positive, so you're helping a little bit. Here, if there are negative things and you only take away part of it, but there's still other negative things causing the same problem, so maybe that's not an issue. So he has a suffix about that in general. And then he also talks about the tshuva that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has in his section on Hilchos Shabbos, where he talks about a moshav where there was, I guess they were refusing to let their Jews go, so they had an arba coming that was causing them problems. The question was about spraying poison onto them to protect the crops, and doing this on Shabbos, and he talks about whether it's Zoreh. So he discusses Rav Zilberstein, why isn't it Zoreh? Wasn't it the same thing as taking out the bugs? So he assumes maybe that the reason Ritzi Pesach and others didn't raise an issue of Zoreh is that maybe in order for it to be a violation of Zoreh, you have to be taking it out from the plant itself. If it's something that's coming out of nowhere, like a lion tries to jump on your lion is the literal expression, Mavriach Hari is the expression you find in Halacha of somebody who's getting rid of a problem. So let's say I see a lion about to jump onto your crops, so then it's presumably not presumably not an issue of Zoreh. Then he goes on to discuss also, says, so what if somebody wants to put up a scarecrow? So he says there could be other issues with putting up a scarecrow. Maybe it's a bone issue. But it's probably not a Zriya Daraisa issue, the fact that you're scaring away animals who aren't there yet. That's probably not what Yerushalmi is talking about when it talks about removing bugs that are already there and a part of things. Okay, so that's probably what, again, we could talk about Zareya much longer. We could expand these points, but we probably want to get a little bit into Harisha, dig our heels a little bit into Harisha. So, sorry, I have to find one for it. So, you know, that will really start tomorrow. I guess we'll just bring up some of the key issues. We'll just mention right now, let's say one or two of the key issues that we'll start with tomorrow. So one issue is an issue that some of the guys were asking about. What is the relationship between Harisha and Zareya, which is a major textual question just when we're reading the Mishnah and talking about that whole discussion we had about what the Shir is the assumption that a Harisha is defined by being there for Zareya, and then what type of Zareya and how likely is Zareya, that's a major discussion, so we'll get into that. And then also the question of what also emerges from our Gemara, that apparently there's theoretically at least two Harishas, a Harisha before the Zareya and a Harisha after the Zareya. So are they both considered to be Harishas? Are they both considered to be Malachas of Harishas? Harisha only that which is preparatory for Zareya, or is it also what comes after Zareya? So we'll get into that, and we'll probably also get into a little bit the Malachas and Shvich Lagufa concepts that are often illustrated through Harisha and the like. Okay, so maybe we'll just quickly, Chazir spoke about, so we spoke a little bit about some of our remaining issues in terms of Zareya, the question of Atzis Sheino Nakuv, the question of whether when the Gemara says you can't, the Chiyuv, apparently for shifting its position closer and farther from the ground, whether that really is an Issa D'Oraisa, like the Rambam says, or an Issa D'Rabbanan, like Rashi and Tosa says, and they're raising the question from the Hetter for Kavod Abrius for a similar situation. And that brought us into the whole question of, is there a Isser to speed up the process? And the Eglital Din L'Chalek between enhancing and speeding up, and also especially because when it comes to Bishul, so there seems to be, apparently there is an Isser D'Oraisa to speed up the process, and the Eglital suggesting this is yet again reflective of the Chiluk between Zareya and Bishul that was the relevant to the Mechas Chinuch's position in general. And we talked about Rav Zilberstein's tshuva about the avocado seed, whether putting that in a cup is Zareya, and he said that he thought it was Zareya, and that you should take it out, and discussed why that was different from taking the seeds out of the ground on Shabbos, or even after Shabbos. And then we talked about the question of Atzitz Nakuv, and Atzitz Jaino Nakuv, and the machlokas about that, whether that's considered to be a derech zriya or not, and then the fact there's also a discussion as to what counts as an atzis shein nakov, that maybe there are some materials which don't seem to be nakov, but maybe have a halachic definition of nakov, and that's an important issue also. Then we talked about the Rambam's position that soaking grain and barley is potentially a zareya issue. The Gemara mentions it as a different issue, he mentions it as a zareya issue. Question where he gets that from, we saw there basically two different approaches, that either it's because of a concern that something's going to grow there, or it's because of an idea the Radbaz expresses, that it's preparatory for having it somewhere else, which is a whole different concept, introduces the whole idea that Hachana for Zareya could be considered Zareya, and there's the promotion. I was mentioned maybe that's similar to the Rashash's view, that since it's all about the Hashrasha, so anything that's a step towards the Hashrasha is defined as your problem, whether it's putting it in the ground or putting it in the water before putting it in the ground. And we talked about the Magen Avraham's condition that it has to be there half a day or so, and what exactly that might represent. I mentioned Blair Warman's take on that. And then we talked about the Nishmas Adam's position that that you can learn from there that Atzis Nakov is a problem, and why there might be a distinction when that's not necessarily a perfect raya, and talked about the question of whether.
Isn't
Shmuel talking about Atzis Chain or Nakuv? Yeah, as I said, it's Nakuv. Why it may not be a perfect raya. Then we talked about the question of whether the Malach of Zareya requires you to actually cover up the seeds, various rayas that it probably does, and the possible nafkamina is if two people do it, if you do it before Shabbos and cover it up on Shabbos, if you take it out before that, might all be affected by that question. Then we talked about watering the ground, whether that's an issue of Zareya, it's an issue of Harisha? Is it one or the other? Maybe both. It's a whole discussion. The Gemara has a discussion about that. We didn't get into some of the more details about that, which maybe we should follow up at some point about, you know, the question of the separations of the, say, the gzeres of washing your hands near the outside. It's a whole sugya. But if you're using a faucet, it might make a difference according to some postmen. It's not considered to be kocho, and if you're not intending to water the ground, there's a whole discussion about that we didn't get into. Then there's also the question of meiraglayim, that the Shulchan Aruch had said meiraglayim is bad for the produce, but earlier than that the Urim said it was a problem, and the Tiferes Yisrael after that said it was a problem, so it's a little bit of a somewhat open discussion. And then we talked about alluded to the literature about opening windows in front of plants, and mentioned that there are those who compare it to the Rashba's position of closing your door when you have a deer inside the house. And then we talked about the Gemara about the Yehuda's position that you have to uproot what you've planted, whether it's shogeg or mezid. We talked about the distinctions between that and bishul, and how that might apply to other things, and the Loberstein's interesting case about the house. And we didn't get into the hasra issues, which are also, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow, some of the hasra issues, just what that might represent. We talked about the question of what the Gemara means when it says all these additional actions, Zomer and Mabrich and Noteya and Markiv, are all Melacha Achas, three different views in the Rishonim. Does it mean that they're all Avos, except for Zomer? Does it mean that even Zomer is Meina Av, that was the view of the Rambam, or Rabbeinu Chananel, that really only Zareya is the Av, and everything else is a Tolda, or a Tolda of a Tolda? And we mentioned as more of an afkamina for Shemitah than it does for Shabbos, because Toldas don't apply in a level of the Raisa for Shvius. And then we talked about the Yerushalmi statement that taking insects out is an act of Zareya. So how far do you take that? There's Zilberstein's discussion, what if you are spraying to get rid of locusts? Maybe that's not considered to be the same thing because they're external. And because Rashi Pesach Frank raised the issue in terms of Zored, not in terms of Zareya. And then he brought that question to the issue of the scarecrow as well, where a similar dian could be made. Then we started just to introduce a little bit our topics to the Harisha that we'll pick up from tomorrow. The question of to what extent does it have to prepare for Zriya, or at least potentially prepare for Zriya, and what about the Harisha that happens after Zriya? Is that called Harisha or not? So Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we will pick up from there. Okay, you should have a wonderful day.